The 2015 census was recently released, and there have been some improvements in the economy. Median income rose by 5.2% from 2014. The overall poverty rate dropped to 13.5%, down from 14.8% the previous year. But when it comes to children, the picture is bleaker. 20% of the country's 74 million children are living below the poverty line, many well below. So how does the wealth gap affect kids? You know the stats. The top 1% of Americans make over $389,000. The median income is just over $56,000. CEOs make 331 times what the average worker earns. So for the first of our occasional look at young people and the gap, let's check in with Renee Wilson-Simmons, director of the National Center for Children in Poverty at Columbia University. Renee, welcome.
Oh, thank you.
We feel like we're seeing this anecdotally, some people who straddle the economic divide. You have maybe in one family, in an extended family, kids who have little kids who have iPhones, and in another, little kids who don't have enough to eat. Are you seeing a bigger gap?
If we're saying that 20% of our children are living in poverty, that means that the youngest, the most vulnerable to risk to their health and development, and the poorest residents of our nation are our children. And that's a huge concern.
Well, and you know, just list off some of the impacts. What are you seeing?
Well, we know that poverty can cause or exacerbate poor health. It can impede children's cognitive development and their ability to learn. It contributes to social, emotional, and behavioral problems. And we know that children who experience poverty when they're very young or for long periods of time are at greatest risk for poor outcomes. But the thing that we like to focus on above all else is that we know that children do better when families do better. So we're the National Center for Children in Poverty, but we can't just focus on the healthy development of children, because that can happen without focusing on the supports that parents need to nurture their children.
Well, but what about the fact that we see more now of the gap? We are able to see into wealth perhaps more than ever, you know, the lifestyles of the rich and famous. Children are seeing the differences perhaps more than ever before. How does that impact them?
You're absolutely right about them seeing more, because they're let into the lives of people who under normal circumstance they would never interact with. They can see the clothes, the food, all of the things that are very far out of reach for them. Over the past three decades, really, there's been a growing share of the public that's come to view American society as divided into two groups, the haves and the have-nots. And as early as 1988, Gallup conducted a poll asking the very simple question, is America divided into the haves and have-nots? 71% said no, and 26% said yes. In 2011, it was no, 52%, and yes, 45%. And in that year, 73% of blacks said yes, and 40% of whites.
And let's just remind ourselves a little bit of a background, because we have been reminded recently the institutionalized economic divides. It's not just income, it's wealth that isn't passed down in many African-American families in particular, because they received little of the assistance post-World War II, things like the GI Bill to buy homes. There was redlining by banks that kept them from getting loans. Black farm workers and domestic workers rarely had Social Security. This subtracts from the kind of wealth that gets passed along generation after generation. There aren't the homes to sell, the businesses to pass on, the Social Security to leave. And you say that, again, talking about kids, one of the biggest myths is that people can just climb out of this by working harder.
You know, I'm so glad you said that. It's this you can make it if you try perspective. And successive polls that were conducted by Pew Research have found that at every income level, not just at some income levels, at every income level, Americans are far more likely than, say, Europeans to believe that individuals, not society, are responsible for their own failures, both economic and otherwise. And at the core of it is this American dream, the belief that anybody who works hard can move up economically regardless of his or her social circumstances. And unfortunately, despite the data and the history, Americans overestimate the amount of upward social mobility that exists in society. So national polling by Pew found that 40% of Americans consider it common for a person in the U.S. to start poor, to work hard, and become rich And the truth is that 43% of Americans raised at the bottom of the economic ladder, they remain stuck there as adults, and 70% never make it to the middle. And the chances of moving up and down the income scale have been relatively unchanged over the last 20 years. So by overemphasizing individual mobility, we ignore some of these important social determinants of success, like those you've mentioned, family inheritance, social connection, structural discrimination. And, you know, it was the late George Carlin who said the reason they call it the American dream is because you have to be asleep to believe it.
You talk about the inability to pull yourself up by your bootstraps. How much more difficult is that if part of getting into the workforce, part of advancing now, seems to include technology, iPhones, internet access, cable television, not available to many low-income homes?
What we consider basic needs has changed considerably over time, especially with advances in technology. And while many homes may have cable TV, the other needs are often not met. When we talk about the needs of children and the importance of succeeding in school, we sometimes make assumptions about home life, about the fact that you have technology available, about the fact that you have a place to study. Well, do you have a place to study? Is there an adult available to help? Is an adult available who's able to help? And one that people often don't think about that's a chronic stressor for children is noise.
When we're talking about access to information, to culture, you mentioned Sesame Street.
Yes, the sad tale of Sesame Street. We think of Sesame Street as the favorite brownstone and that there was access for everyone. But today, Sesame Street isn't available to everyone because it's only available through HBO. When we think about that as the one thing that all children had access to, even that is no longer available.
And talking again about the older kids with the new technology, their learning tools, iPhones, the internet, your laptop, if you don't have them, it may contribute to something called the summer slide.
Yes, during the summer when if you're in a more resource community, there are opportunities to continue to learn. And that's especially important for younger children and issues about being able to read at grade level. And the slips there for younger children are concerning. Mm-hmm. I really think it's this larger issue. And the issue, unfortunately, is a barrier to efforts to address child poverty and the disadvantage it engenders. And it's this belief that children are poor through no fault of their own. And so they deserve our support. But poor adults, their parents are responsible for the sorry situation in which they find themselves, and so they have to deal with it as best they can. The poor are perceived to be lazy, culturally deficient, criminally inclined, and reproductively prodigious, and I think that's a big one. Why so many kids? And financially inept, and now they're considered the undeserving poor. And I think those kinds of beliefs continue to put the health and development of many poor children in jeopardy. I mean, in terms of where we are as a nation in relationship to other countries, I think it's instructive to look at data from a recent report from the UN Children's Fund. It ranked the well-being of children in 35 developed nations, and I'm sure you're aware of it.
Yeah.
The United States ranked 34th of 35 countries surveyed. It was above only Romania. And this poor U.S. showing is a clear reflection of our nation's growing income inequality. And that would help explain why the U.S. on child poverty is ranked between Bulgaria and Romania, although Americans on average are six times richer than Bulgarians and Romanians. It's about what we think of the poor. And we think they're not deserving. And I think that unless we can change public perceptions, unless we can understand that there are reasons for the poverty and that there are effective approaches, I don't know how we're going to move forward.
Renee Wilson-Simmons, director of the National Center for Children in Poverty at Columbia University's Mailman School of Public Health. Thank you.
Oh, you're quite welcome. It was a pleasure.